harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fighting down to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the crack beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, Canada is in the grips of disruptions of our railway lines by radical Indians and their social justice warrior supporters. The main east-west line along Lake Ontario that connects the west with Quebec and the Maritimes is blocked just outside of Belleville by the Tiendanega Mohawks, or the Mohawk Warrior Society, so-called. This has gone on since Thursday a week ago. The police have done nothing. Oh, no, I'm sorry. They're monitoring the situation, yeah. Which means sitting on their duffs and doing nothing. Having another coffee at Tim Hortons. Complete lack of national will. The CN is warning that important deliveries, including food and some heating fuel, and all sorts of deliveries from factories or to factories have been stopped. There could actually begin to be propane and food shortages in some areas, and the government does nothing. Well, I'm sorry. The government sent a minister down to negotiate with the Indians today. There have been protests elsewhere. There's a blockage mostly by social justice warriors at Yonge and Dundas yesterday during the height of the rush hour. There has been an occupation of a bridge, I believe, in Montreal, on and off in Vancouver, an attempt to block entrance to the port of Vancouver for workers. Police eventually cleared those people away. And it's got to be understood, this is not really Indians against the rest of us. It's some Indians. For instance, much is being done in the name of the Wet'suwet'en. That's a tribe in central British Columbia. Well, actually, the elected leaders of the Wet'suwet'en have signed an agreement with the pipeline company. They're on side. It's the hereditary chiefs that are not on side, and they're using social justice warriors and some natives as well. The protest in Ontario is by Mohawks in solidarity with the hereditary chiefs in British Columbia. It has nothing to do with anything going on in Ontario. Now, what is happening here is the culmination of several things. They've been building up for a long time. First of all, there's the radically unequal treatment of people because of my government policy. There are privileged minorities, in this case, Indians. For several decades, Indians have occupied government offices, occupied land that didn't belong to them, and the police do virtually nothing. They just let them do it. Now, whereas if you and I did it, well, believe me, we'd be handcuffed and hauled off to prison so fast. So this is the problem with minority-itis. In fact, even the Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, was unable to visit the mayor of Halifax on Friday because there was a protest that got in her way. You see what's happening? Legitimate government, legitimate transportation, and legitimate pipeline construction, all of which have been approved, you know, are being obstructed essentially by terrorists using force or the threat of force to impose their way. Now, any government in charge has to deal with that. And yes, they don't want to confront the native people. They don't want to confront some native people because it might look bad. And if there's any violence, well, it's all the government's fault. No, it isn't. Law and order must be preserved. The free access to public routes of transportation must be preserved. Now, if the government doesn't do that, it basically has lost control. And I'll tell you what, the order must be restored, preferably with a minimum use of force, but it must be restored. That should be non-negotiable. Those are the routes we've been talking about are public. They should not be blocked. The legislature of the province of British Columbia was unable to convene for a number of hours because some Indians and their social justice warrior supporters blocked the entrance to the legislature. It should not be allowed. This is the government of a province held hostage by a group of street crazies. No way. The police should have been in there in force, pushing, and if that didn't do it, if that wasn't good enough, then come the nightsticks and the pepper spray. In the case of the so-called Mohawk warriors at Thayendanega, here's an idea. Give them 5 minutes to haul. They've got a snowplow vehicle blocking the path of the tracks. All right, give them 5 minutes to move that, move it out of the way, and remove themselves, let's say, whatever the safe distance is from the railway tracks, so, you know, 20 yards or whatever it might be, and say, you've got 5 minutes. If you've not moved by then, you will be arrested. And what I would start off with, because it's brutally cold now, you bring in a fire reels, and you put the fire hoses on them, freeze them out. It's not going to hurt them. It's going to hurt them. It's not going to kill them or anything like that. The time has come to reassert ourselves. And I'll tell you partly why this has not happened. Well, first of all, There's all sorts of, there's a lack of will. But it's will that's been undermined by, to be quite blunt about it, bullshit. When you buy the cultural Marxist cult of the victim ideology, see, Native Indians, they're always the victims, you see. They're not the victims. There have never been more Indians since the creation than there are in Canada today. They've done well under the white man. Things aren't perfect. Now, yes, and there may have been wrongs and so on in the past. But there is no reason for them to do this. And there's no reason, and they should not be allowed to disrupt the country any more than you and I would be allowed to illegally disrupt the country. So partly, you see, when you buy into nonsense, you end up making bad mistakes. Well, second thing that plays in with some of this is the nutty ideology that the Liberal Party has imposed on Canada in conjunction with the Socialist NDP and the Green Party. And that is the choose your term for global warming or climate change or whatever it is, and it's all our fault. That's the thing you have to understand. It's all our fault because we burn coal to run to create electricity. We use gasoline in cars and diesel in trucks. And jet engine fuel and transportation. And it's all our fault. We're putting carbon dioxide into the air. And to make a very long story very short, so what? Trudeau even calls it pollution. It's not pollution. Carbon dioxide is good. Plants use carbon dioxide with water to create sugar, to create the stuff of life. In fact, greenhouse growers who want to improve the growth rate pump carbon dioxide into the greenhouse. No, it's not a poison. No, it's not pollution. It's good. But Trudeau has bought into this nutty climate change ideology and wants Canada to go green, massively reduce the amount of hydrocarbons generated by, I think it's 2030. We've signed on to the ridiculous Paris Accords, even though the world's greatest generators of carbon dioxide are countries like India and China, and they're exempt. But you see, the social justice warriors are able to play into this ideology and at least in their own minds, justify what they're doing and you see, if they've been told, you know, it's a crisis. In fact, Canada's, the government has said, it's a crisis. It's a crisis. It isn't a crisis. The climate change, assuming it even is occurring. Now, when I say change, of course, there will be a slight different change from year to year, but that's not a pattern. If there is indeed a slight warming, or as some argue, perhaps a slight cooling, it's not a crisis. It may be something around the edges we may have to adapt to a little bit. We've done that before, and we'll do it again. So it's not a crisis, but there are people being told that. Trudeau granted that nutcase, that 16-year-old nutcase who needs a good spanking, Greta Thunberg, who has mental problems as well, an audience. He has given her prominence, and she's been leading various marches across Canada and elsewhere. And you know her cry, "How dare you! You've ruined our lives." The pampered little pest hasn't had, if her life has been ruined by anybody, it's been by her radical and indulgent parents. But anyway, this is out there. And so people, unfortunately, think, well, there is a crisis. And so in their own minds, they're justified in some of these actions. Anyway, Diane Francis, writing for the National Post, says, "Liberals to blame for the national crisis. The illegal road and rail blockades perpetuated by indigenous radicals across the country are not about pipelines or fossil fuels. It's an existential threat to Canada and its sovereignty. And Prime Minister Trudeau's Liberal government is to blame." I sure agree with her on that. "For years of pandering and subsidizing 632 First Nations," that's what they call themselves, and I don't think we should go along with that title, but okay. "For subsidizing 632 First Nation leaders has led to this catastrophe, which is being spearheaded by five unelected hereditary chiefs in British Columbia who claim their nation, the Wet'suwet'en, is exempt from Canadian laws and regulations, even though the elected band councils have signed on for the pipeline." So it's important not to recognize this is not really Indians against, let's say, white society or the rest of us. It's not. It's some factions of Indians aided and augmented by the social justice warriors and the climate change crazies. They claim sovereignty over 22,000 square kilometers, a swath of land, an area the size of Israel, and have successfully invoked nationwide solidarity protests that have crippled portions of the nation's rail system. Actually, an area, but around the size of the state of Israel. The Wet'suwet'en hereditary leaders and their accomplices have defied court orders and ignored agreements signed by 20 band councils. So many Indians are on side. Including their own. The issue at hand is the building of a 670 kilometer, that's roughly 400 mile gas pipeline to a $40 billion LNG or liquefied natural gas plant on the Canadian coast. But at stake is the future of Canada itself, warns Diane Francis. On December 31st, the BC Supreme Court ordered protesters to allow workers access to remote logging road in northern BC. But Wet'suwet'en activists continued to block the road, and days later, 28 were arrested, six of whom were released without charges. Now dozens of arrests have followed across the country. Diane Francis continues. "Such lawlessness has been emboldened since 2015 when Trudeau decided that the federal government would not enforce the First Nations Financial Transparency Act, which is one of the good things the Harper government brought in. That was an act that required an audited statement from each band council showing where the money had come in, how it had been spent, and the salaries of the chiefs and the members of the band council. As much for the interest and good of the Indians on the reserve as for the taxpayers who put up most of this money. Well, the chiefs fought back like as if Harper had been asking them to be marched to the gallows, and for very good reason. Many of them shamelessly exploit their own people. Just shamelessly exploit their people. In many cases, the band council give priority preference for housing, which they assign to their own families and friends. And many Indians live in poverty, not because of white society, but because of this the mismanagement on many reserves. Not all, of course, but many. Well, anyway, the chiefs did not want that act, but the Harper government imposed it, and they were getting some results. Well, what does Trudeau do? A complete about face. The law requires Indigenous leaders, often inherited chiefs, to be accountable and transparent by forcing them to publish audits of band expenses, including their compensation. Along the way, Ottawa has also sidestepped disputes involving corruption, rigged elections, no elections, nepotism, and charter rights violations by Indian leaders against their own people. The Trudeau government has sided with the often totalitarian and corrupt and chiefs and band councils. Not all, I mean, okay, I must emphasize, but a considerable number. By ceding its oversight powers to band chiefs and councils without checks and balances or any semblance of accountability, the feds have allowed the rights of Indigenous people who fall under the control of these chiefs and councils to be trampled upon, according to Indigenous lawyer and activist Catherine Twin. Now the rights of all Canadians are being trampled on. These self-appointed potentates are not only thumbing their noses at the rule of law, but at their own members. For example, Wet'suwet'en member Phil Tint told CTV that he's hoping to get a job with the project. Right now, this has probably got one of the biggest job creations in the province of British Columbia here, and we want to be part of it, he said. The hereditary chief's office, they don't speak for the whole clan. And it's important to know that the Indians are severely divided. Another member, Bonnie George, added, a majority of our people do want to see this project go through. The reason why it's not out there is because people are afraid to speak up, but that's starting to change. Intimidated by their own Indian leadership in some cases. This week, faced with a propane shortage due to the blockade, Quebec Premier François Legault demanded Ottawa must get involved because that's the blockade, doesn't only concern Quebec, it concerns all provinces. Yet the federal government's response has been irresponsible at best. Trudeau continues to be overseas. He was in Africa trying to scare up support for an utterly useless project. We're in stiff competition for a vacant seat on the Security Council, a two-year seat appointment. And we're in competition with Norway and Ireland. We're tarting around trying to get support from African countries or for any support we can get from anywhere. This is an utter vanity project. It's an impotent and useless position on an impotent and useless council in an impotent and useless and mega expensive body, the United Nations. Anyway, that's been Trudeau's priority for a long time, and certainly this week when he should be back home trying to manage things. Transport Minister Marc Garneau said enforcement of court orders is up to the provinces. The Prime Minister's office and the Crown Indigenous Relations Minister referred media calls to the Natural Resources Minister's office, which in turn said the matter was a provincial one. So, you know, passing the buck. When asked, the Prime Minister merely said the protests were, quote, an issue of concern. No, it's a breakdown of law and order. It's not an issue of concern. He also called for dialogue. Now, there's no dialogue needed. It's non-negotiable. You're blocking, in the case of the Indians and their supporters, they're blocking bridges, railway tracks, roads. It's not negotiable. There's no dialogue. There should be a peremptory order giving them, you know, a reasonable but very limited period of time to cease the blockade, or else, and the or else ought to be arrest. In the absence of federal intervention, the crisis will escalate. The chiefs are now demanding that BC cancel all permits for this and other resource projects, and that the RCMP and provincial authorities vacate the territory. In other words, simply cede control to the thugs. They also invoked a groundless report by the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, which urged Canada to stop the Site C Dam project, the Trans Mountain pipeline expansion, and this coastal gas line pipeline on the basis that the rights of Indigenous people are being ignored. That this is an ignorant report. We should never have signed that international protocol on the rights of Indigenous people, because it's far-reaching and broad and undermines national sovereignty. But we did. So, pursuant to that, a committee that actually had not even visited Canada to study this. They wrote a completely ignorant report making these demands. They should simply be sent back to them with no way, Jose. Now a full-blown secession crisis is underway thanks to the Liberal government's abdication of the responsibility to uphold laws, democratic rights, and the orders of the courts of Canada. And when he talks about secession, if Western Canada continues to be thwarted by government inaction and or collaboration, then there already is a rising call for a separation of Alberta from Canada and maybe other Western provinces like Saskatchewan, and all of this is the failure of the government to govern. But you know, when you sign on to bullshit, that's the result. Here's a piece by Patrick Morgan. He's an environmentalist. He certainly has proved his credentials, but he's a very sensible one who questions climate change, or questions the human agency in terms of climate change, that whether it's something we have done. Anyway, this piece is called Banned in Regina. Late last Friday, I was deplatformed for the first time in my 45 years of giving keynote speeches at conferences around the world. The city of Regina, which through my speakers bureau had signed a contract with me to kick off their Reimagine Regina conference, and I spoke about that a couple of days ago in May, caved to local activists and told me I should stay home. In its announcement regarding my banishment, the city said it did not want to, quote, spark a debate on climate change. No, there is kind of a debate going on. It said the stated goal of the conference is, quote, to make the city's facilities and operations 100% renewable by 2050. In other words, municipal officials wanted me to say what they wanted me to say and not what I wanted to say to them. That's just not how I operate. And I've talked about this ridiculous conference before. It's trying to make Regina's city facilities and operations renewable by 2050. Now, it's hard to even understand what it means. What do they mean renewable?
Uh,
facilities like roads, sidewalks, sewers, electrical grid work, public transportation, will constantly have to be renewed, repaired, upgraded. It's hard to even understand what they mean by renewable. It's some. Do they mean like self-generating, that they'll build a road and it never has to be maintained or rebuilt? Build a sewer network and it never has to be expanded or repaired or rebuilt? It just sounds like, you know, madman nonsense. Regina is one of at least 54 cities and towns in Canada that have declared a state of climate emergency. This is political virtue signaling at its disingenuous best. The only people fleeing any emergency from these cities are doing so to escape the frigid winter by flying to a warmer country further south. Not a lot of Canadians from our southern regions are heading to Yellowknife or Inuvik in the Northwest Territories to escape global warming. it's the declaration of a crisis that isn't. The climate emergency is at best a bad joke. It might even be amusing were it not threatening to ban the primary energy sources, natural gas, oil, and coal, that provide 85% of global energy and make our civilization possible. Without those, we would humanity would truly freeze in the dark. Of the 195 countries recognized by the United Nations, Canada is the coldest, with an annual temperature of minus 5.35 degrees centigrade. Russia is number two only because it doesn't have islands situated near the North Pole, as Canada does. It strikes me as odd that the world's coldest country worries more about warming than people of India, Brazil, or Saudi Arabia, where it really is warm. These countries don't have carbon taxes that punish farmers for fueling their tractors or policies that are aimed at destroying much of their country's natural resource sector. Why do I believe carbon dioxide emissions from using fossil fuels to power modern societies are not pollution? That's well, Trudeau's phrases. That will bring about the apocalypse. Let me count the ways. And this is Patrick Moore, formerly of Greenpeace, so he's really paid his environmentalist dues. First and foremost, carbon dioxide is the most important food for all life on Earth. You have to remember that's not a pollutant, it's a food. On both land and in the sea, all the carbon for carbon-based life, which is all life, comes from carbon dioxide. All green plants on land and all plants in the sea, phytoplankton and kelps, combine carbon dioxide and water and by photosynthesis produce, through this magic, produce the sugars that provide the energy source for all life, including ours. The increase in carbon dioxide due to our emissions has resulted in a greening of the planet and an expansion of forests. This is not contested. So you're far from some sort of horrific apocalypse. Slightly more carbon dioxide in the air has actually been good. Not a reason for a conniption or a heart attack. But of course, that doesn't fit the globalist agenda. Second, writes Patrick Moore, the hundreds of millions of years since modern life evolved from primitive single-cell life in the sea, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and oceans has steadily declined. This is primarily due to the advent of calcifying marine species that use carbon dioxide and calcium dissolved in the sea to make protective shells of calcium carbonate. These are such creatures as calcium carbonate is limestone. These are such creatures as corals, clams, mussels, shrimp, and many planktonic species. As a result, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere fell from at least 0.6 of 1% only 20,000 years ago to 0.018%, that's about 0.2 of 1% now. Third, both cement production and our use of fossil fuels are putting carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere and the oceans. Both its very long-term depletion and the return of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere by our burning of fossil fuels and production of cement were inadvertent. There's no credit or blame, just pure scientific facts. There's no doubt in my mind that on balance our carbon dioxide emissions are 100% positive for the continuation of life on Earth. Commercial greenhouse growers around the world inject carbon dioxide into their greenhouses to double and triple the concentration compared to present atmospheric levels. By doing so, they increase crops by 20 to 60%. This too is uncontested. So that's a very powerful. I'm glad to see that he didn't just, meekly accept being deplatformed. I think it's really important to call these goons out for what they've been doing. Well, as I mentioned, the trust fund kid, that's Justin Trudeau, was doing the tour of Africa. He was in Ethiopia, then he was in Senegal trying to hustle up some votes for Canada's bid for a seat on the Security Council. Well, he managed to stick his foot in the elephant doo-doo in Senegal because and he ought to know this, at least his people who brief him should have told him this. Or maybe he does know and doesn't care, but the whole world is not necessarily on side with his radical support for LGBTQ. And the president of Senegal rebuked Justin Trudeau for pushing gay pride parades in Senegal. Hey, well, what you folks ought to do is have a gay pride parade. We've got them all over Canada, and I attend almost every one, says Trudeau. So the Senegalese president said, we're comfortable with our laws, and there'll be no change in legislation about homosexuality. Well, good for him. In Dakar, the president of Senegal rebuffed Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's attempt to discuss decriminalizing homosexuality and promoting gay pride parades in the predominantly Muslim West African country. I think that's another vote we're not going to get. And President Macky Sall's defense of his country's culture and laws made front page news in the Francophone country's capital of Dakar. CTV correspondent Glenn McGregor tweeted a photo of Le Soleil's headline trumpeting Sal's rebuke to Trudeau. Our society does not accept homosexuality. Good for them. In French, notre société n'accepte pas l'homosexualité. Another diplomatic disaster. Canada's Liberal Prime Minister told reporters at a press conference Wednesday that he had to raise the subject of Senegal's criminalization of homosexuality with Sal because he was a great defender of human rights, as Trudeau is. Well, not freedom of speech, incidentally. Don't get us wrong on that one. For his part, the Senegalese president said his country respected human rights, but were comfortable with our laws, and he stressed that there would be no change in legislation on homosexuality. And good for him, it's an independent country. We cannot ask Senegal to legalize homosexuality and organize tomorrow's gay pride parade, President Sall said. It's not possible. Our society does not accept it. Right. And actually, much of Canadian society doesn't accept it, but it's just forced down our throats. It's our way of living and being. It has nothing to do with homophobia, he added. Senegal is a moderate, predominantly Muslim nation where homosexuality is criminalized and punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Prosecutions are rare, but criminal discrimination in the country's traditional communities runs deep. The country is considered one of Africa's model democracies and has a tradition of stable government, civilian rule. Yeah, I mean, it's just only uh,
a little over 50 years ago that homosexual practice, not homosexuality, but homosexual practice was legalized in the United Kingdom and Canada. Trudeau's 8-day tour of Africa ended on Friday when he headed on to Germany for a security conference. He should have had it over to Canada. We've got a security problem here. Although Sahle repudiated Trudeau's homosexual advocacy, he told reporters he backs Canada's UN bid. "We need Canada's voice out the Security Council," he said. However, it remains the case that under Trudeau, Canada is committed to indefinitely bankrolling the global promotion of homosexuality and gender ideology. Last February, the Liberals announced that they would spend $30 million over the next 5 years, and more after that, more than the $10 million every year in perpetuity as long as they're in power, to advance the LGBTQ agenda as part of international aid. So we're tying our foreign aid to pushing the homosexual agenda. It's a bad use of Canadian taxpayers' money, and is absolutely an outrage. Well, this is Paul Drum. You're on the fighting side of me. Go ahead and take my musical break right now, and let's up the beat a little bit with some good German drinking music, some good German drinking songs. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Paul from You're on the Fighting Side of Me, back with you again tomorrow. So the show we sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul from, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of caviar from Britain's shore. Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.